Good morning. Good morning. Oh, I'm so surprised to see the choir there. The sanctuary is tilting. I don't know what to do. No. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Parish Church on this very special Sunday morning. Thank you for coming out as winter returns one more time. Coffee hour will follow our service, as always, through the door down the hall. Signs will direct you to the lower level, to Fellowship Hall. If you are a guest with us this morning, we welcome you here. We're glad to have you with us, and we hope that this will be one of many times that you'll choose to be with us on Sunday morning and other times as well. And now, friends, if I could do a drum roll, I would, as we welcome the search committee to the pulpit for a special announcement. A woohoo is in order.
Good morning. I'm Sharon Brownfield, and I have the privilege of being chair of your search committee. I'd like to introduce the other members of the search committee. We have Kevin O'Brien, Jack Zettler, and Troy Liston. There are three other members of our search committee who could not be here because of family commitments, and that is Rebecca Stadolnik, Deb O'Connell, and Michael Merrill. They have, however, given us words to tell about their excitement about our candidate. So there is an excitement, and we have it here. Yes, finally, after a year of hard work with 28 potential candidates, your search committee has selected your ministerial candidate, who also has enthusiastically accepted us. So we are very excited to announce our candidate for the first female settled minister in our congregation's history, the Reverend Dr. Cynthia Cindy Landrum. I want to give you just a brief background about Cindy. She is currently the minister in the Universalist Church of East Liberty, a family-sized church in Michigan, which right now has a snowstorm. She has served for 15 years and is much loved by her congregation. For her personally, she wanted to serve a larger congregation where she could share her skills and knowledge. She has also served as a minister at the UU Church in Gardner, Massachusetts, and has family here, so she is familiar with Massachusetts. She has led her current congregation through challenging times as well as connected them to larger community issues. She has been very active and still is with the UUA, frequently writing for the UU World as well for online blogs. She is a published author with a book of her sermons and two Zentangle coloring books for all you Zentangle fans. She has been very active in social justice work and most recently seeing the passage of non-discrimination ordinance in her town guaranteeing protection for LGBTQ people. She had worked on it for 10 years. She is married to Peter Larkin Morrison, an ordained UU minister who teaches art history at Jackson College and in prisons. Their daughter, Kathleen Katie, is entering ninth grade in the fall. Katie is an avid reader and a French horn player. Listen to the music. So now let me turn to our committee members who want to share with you what drew us to pick her as our ministerial candidate. Kevin.
Thank you. In the search process, once we have narrowed down the field, we speak about the candidates with references they provide us and references that we develop ourselves. I spoke with several of Cindy's references. I spoke with a minister from the Mid-America region of the UUA who was at a workshop for ministers in either Florida or Texas when I spoke to her. I forget which it was. Cindy had delivered the sermon to that group of ministers that morning, and this woman's comment was that Cindy knocked my socks off. She continued saying that she is one of the more talented ministers, and I don't say that about everyone. Another minister said she was underutilized and should move on to a larger congregation. Another said she may be the most genuine minister she knows. Another said she's a very special minister. They all find ways to attach to her specialness, and it's really meaningful to me. A member of a congregation says, "You won't get a better minister. I think she will be famous one day. She's funny. She's personal. She thinks deeply, holds people accountable, well-respected among her colleagues. Well-respected among her colleagues, pushes us deeply theologically, has the ability to anticipate and resolve conflict. She pushed the congregation at our wish, and she's deeply gifted and committed, and she wants to come here."
Jack.
Good morning. I'd just like to share my feelings of anticipation and excitement that I've known since Reverend Dr. Cindy Landrum has chosen our church for her next ministry. From all the interviews and contacts and references we have contacted, I became more and more convinced that of the many candidates that we considered, Reverend Cindy would be the one to bring out the best in our congregation. Besides the confidence I have that she will more than meet the demands of administration, pastoral care, religious education, and all the other demands of ministry, I am especially looking forward to how she will inspire us with her sermons and her energy. She combines her education in English and psychology, her passion for social justice, and her boundless energy in a ministry that will lead us to engage our UU principles not only to the betterment of our individual selves, but to that of the wider community. Our challenge as a congregation will be to match that energy and enthusiasm that Reverend Cindy will bring to us. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Troy. So there are many things about Reverend Cindy as a candidate that impressed me. She had as many questions for us as we had for her, and she has certainly done her homework about our congregation. I love her history of speaking out and taking action on social justice issues, as that's such an important thing here. She is considered a thought leader in UU circles and brings her introspection and curiosity to all she does. It also doesn't hurt that she and her family are aficionados of nerd pop culture. She's done sermons about the appeal of the Force in Star Wars to UU sensibilities, and she and her family are fans of Harry Potter and Doctor Who. They love board games and gaming and are excited to be part of a community that embraces these fandoms. She showed herself to be a real person in our interactions, able to have discussions about theology, literature, and also the latest TV shows and movies in the same conversation. I'm really excited for you all to get to know her.
So if you heard a lot about her qualities, I just want to highlight two that stood out for me. In our cottage meetings and in the survey results, there was a real interest in becoming involved with the larger community. This is exactly what Cindy did with her current congregation. Over the past 14 years, she helped her church connect with UU churches in Michigan and become more active in social issues of their community. As one of her references said, she increased the profile of her congregation and UU through her outreach and witness. In addition to all the candidates we interviewed, Cindy was the most prepared and organized. She asked great questions, had read all our material we had developed and created, and really wanted to know about us, how we were organized, our processes, and our challenges. She actively listened. So as I mentioned, unfortunately, three members aren't here, but they did give us words to, again, share with you their excitement about bringing Cindy to this congregation. Rebecca.
Speaking for Rebecca Stadalnik, she says that I'm really excited about how media savvy the Reverend Dr. Landrum is. She's very familiar using social media as a tool to communicate with her congregation and to connect with folks in the greater community. She's also very particular about crafting information so that it reflects positively on her church. I think she'll really help us adapt to using technology better to reach a broader population of people.
I'm going to speak for Michael Merrill, who presented this. I'm excited about the Reverend Dr. Cynthia Lantham because she brings many years of experience both in producing excellent sermons and building strong communities, which she has done during some very trying times in her current congregation. Her sermons provide thoughtful messages, are extremely well written, and are varied in subject and message. She digs deeply into subjects and brings into creative energy and enthusiasm to the pulpit. She is honest and open, which is evident during every interaction with her. Through her ministry, she has been a healing salve during an extremely troubling event involving one of her church members. She was able to bring her flock to allow her flock to navigate through this grieving and healing process, helping the congregation to remain strong during this trying time. Because of her strong leadership, she is loved and respected by her congregation.
And I'm reading for Deb O'Connell. I already feel like in 10 years we are going to look back in awe and amazement that we were lucky enough to install Cindy as our minister. The words that most come to mind for me when thinking about what she'll bring to our church are inspiration and connection. Cindy has already inspired me to want to be a better and more connected UU, more connected to my own church, to our greater community, and to UU as a denomination. Her thought leadership is widely recognized and respected, and she's as excited about us as we are about her. Get ready to be inspired.
So for you to have an opportunity to know more about her, at after service and at coffee hour, we will be passing out a hard copy of an email announcement that we will be mailing to you right after service for more specifics about Cindy. The announcement also has additional links, so you can find out more about her because she is on the web, a real social media presence. She has created a website, RevCyn, RevCyn.org. Password is Welcome FPC with a W capitalized and FPC capitalized, which again will be explained in the email. It will specifically give you an opportunity to listen to those sermons, learn more about her ministry and how she feels about things, and the work she's done. So, what are the next steps? You will actually have an opportunity to meet with Reverend Dr. Cynthia Lantham during candidating week, which is May 13th, Mother's Day, through May 20th. So mark your calendars. We will be posting the schedule on our bulletin board and sending it via email, so you can note the times and the events that you will be able to be there so you can meet her. On May 20th, there will be one service at 10 o'clock a.m., followed by a special congregational meeting at 11:30 a.m. Babysitting will be provided. At that time, all official members of the congregation will vote whether or not to call the Reverend Dr. Lantham as our next settled minister. The vote will be by secret ballot, and at least 90% of those present must vote in the affirmation in order to call her. We are excited for you to meet her and her family. As always, feel free to talk to any member of the Settled Minister Search Committee. Email us at fpcsettledmsw@gmail.com or put anonymous notes in the box before DD. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And friends, in as much as we applaud the candidacy of the Reverend Cynthia Lantham, I would also invite you to share your applause in gratitude for the work of the search committee this year. Yeah. And And now please take a moment to greet the neighbors seated nearby you. If you've not met before, please introduce yourselves and welcome to winter. Come forward to light the chalice as I do our call to worship. Kevin? Thank you. One more search committee thing here. Thank you so much. The Spirit takes sustenance from the sound of the human voice, speaking words of welcome, a generous hello. The Spirit takes sustenance from the smile of recognition on another's face, the exchange of words in the asking, telling, sharing. The Spirit takes sustenance from a needed bit of silence, takes sustenance with eyes opened, eyes closed, hands busy or hands at rest. In this sacred hour, in this time of worship and community, may our spirits take sustenance. Love is the spirit of this church, service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Wondering if any of you have ever been in a place where you feel like you don't belong. Surely. What does that feel like? What does that call up for you when you're in one of those places? Go ahead, just shout it out. Loneliness? Sorry? Apprehension. Scary. Time to look at your feet. Yes, you had something. Alienation. Scared? Yeah. What else? Tempted to run away.
Uncomfortable. Escape, sorry? Challenged. Anticipation? Yes. Despair. Awkward? Embarrassed? Yeah. Becoming invisible, boring, vulnerable, hopeless, all of those things get called up sometime, somewhere, in that moment when maybe the question surrounding it all is, not only do I belong here, but will I ever belong here? That happens to a lot of us in different places and different times. It happened in New York City back in the 1980s to a man named Joseph Shabalala. Joseph is the lead singer for the group Ladysmith Black Mambazo. Anybody here know Ladysmith? Yeah, okay. Ladysmith is from South Africa, the small town in South Africa. All of those folks, all of those singers, Joseph and his family, grew up in the time of apartheid, when there was a great deal of racial hatred toward people of color, toward Africans in the country of South Africa. Joseph found himself in New York City in the back of a taxi. He had left his family in his hometown, left his children, did not know, in fact, if he would ever see any of them or South Africa again. And he started to wonder, will I ever belong here? What will happen to me? How can I possibly belong? And as he was asking himself that question, a song came into his mind, into his heart. Tula klesio, nala pasekaya. Tula, be still. Klesio, my heart. Nala pasekaya, even here I am at home.
We're going to learn that now and sing it all together. So the first thing we need is to get a little beat going so that you can tap something or tap your foot, which we're going to talk about in a second. Get our beat going like this. And the first part of our song sounds like this. It goes, Tula klesio nala pasekaya. Try that. Ready? Go. Tula klesio nala pasekaya. One more time. Tula klesio nala pasekaya. Second part has a little bit of a loud start. It goes like this. Hekaya nala pasekaya. Hekaya nala pasekaya. One more time. Hekaya nala pasekaya. You learned it. Let's try it all together.
And before we try it all together, even really, really, really good songs can be made a little bit better by dancing. This is a very simple thing. If you were Zulu in South Africa, part of your tradition was to show your power and your defiance in dancing that included a high leg kick and very powerful stomping. That was outlawed by the government. And if you were Zulu and if you did those things, you would be arrested and thrown in jail. Not to be deterred or defeated, however, the Zulu people developed a different way of stomping called eskatamiya, which means to stomp quietly. And all you have to do for this dance is to tap your right foot right where you are. Not too loud, because you don't want the authorities to find you. But just loud enough so you know that they don't control you, and that even under apartheid, it is possible to feel like you belong.
Tula klesio nala pasekaya. Tula klesio nala pasekaya. Hekaya nala pasekaya. Hekaya nala pasekaya. Excellent.
Yeah. All right already, huh? Tula klesio nala pasekaya. Be still my heart. Even here, I am at home.
This month, our offering is shared with the Southeast India Project, supporting children, families, women, in making a life and a way for themselves. Yep. It's important work, and I welcome your generosity to that effort, as well as your support of this community. In gratitude, our morning offering will be received. Wendell Berry has told a number of stories about the fictional town of Port William, Kentucky. Jaber Crow is one of them. It takes place in 1932 when Jaber has returned to his native Port William to become the town's barber. Earlier in his life, he had been a pre-ministerial student at Pigeonville College. These are Jaber's words. My vision of the gathered church that had come to me had been replaced by a vision of the gathered community. What I saw now was the community imperfect and irresolute, but held together by the frayed and always fraying, incomplete and yet ever holding bonds of the various sorts of affection. There had maybe never been anybody who had not been loved by somebody, who had been loved by somebody else, and so on and on. It was a community always disappointed in itself, disappointing its members, always trying to contain its divisions and gentle its meanness, always failing, and yet always preserving a sort of will toward goodwill. My vision gathered the community as it never has been and never will be gathered in this world of time. And yet, I saw them all as somehow perfected beyond time by one another's love, compassion, and forgiveness. As it is said, we may be perfected by grace. Why I make Sam go to church
is from Traveling Mercies by Anne Lamott. Sam is her son. I make him go to church because I can. I outweigh him by nearly 75 pounds. But that's only part of it. The main reason is that I wanted to give him what I found in church, which is to say, a path and a little light to see by. Most of the people I know who have what I want, which is to say, purpose, heart, balance, gratitude, joy, are people with a deeper sense of spirituality. They are people in community who pray or practice their faith. They are Buddhist, Jews, Christians, people banding together to work on themselves and for human rights. They follow a brighter light than the glimmer of their own candle. They are part of something beautiful. I saw something once from Jewish Theological Seminary that said, a human life can be like a single letter of the alphabet. It can be meaningless, or it can be part of great meaning. As these words from Wendell Berry and Anne Lamott reside here, I invite you into a brief time of silence. See what they might have to say to you. Come, come, whoever you are, is our next hymn, number 188 in the gray hymnal. Please rise in body and spirit. The church of my growing up years, the church of my family, was a special place for me. I sometimes went to Sunbeams for Jesus during the adult service. I went to vacation Bible school in the summer. I read my Sunday school lesson every Saturday night. I have a perfect attendance pen. And I have lots of gold stars in my Bible because I was very good at memorizing verses and very fast in the sword drills. That's when the teacher calls out a verse from the Bible, and the one who is first to find it correctly by book, chapter, and verse wins. I loved my Sunday school teacher, Mrs. Hughes. In that church, membership was not first and foremost a matter of community. It was a matter of belief. In the case of that congregation, belief in Jesus Christ as my personal Lord and Savior. I left that congregation with no bad feelings, no rage or regret, and there are still gifts from those years
as a Southern Baptist somewhere inside of me. Sometimes they come out when I pray. I was a 20-year-old college student when I signed the membership book of the First Unitarian Church in Lynchburg, Virginia. I made a dress just for that occasion. It was down to my ankles in bright, bright yellow with a little jacket that had embroidered flowers on it. I still have that dress. It was a brightly sunny late spring Sunday. There were a few new members gathered in the front of the congregation with me, along with the president of the board, Linda. Yes. Each new member was given a yellow rose. Words of welcome were said. The community did not tell me what I must believe. We celebrated our shared values. They encouraged me to be my best self, to continue to learn and grow, and to help us all make a difference for love and for justice. That day was one of yes. You know that feeling when you get like that great big yes inside, like this is right, this is good, this is where I belong. Before I became a member, I was involved in doing things in addition to attending worship. I hosted coffee hours. Offering that kind of hospitality was something I enjoyed. I helped with annual cleanups, part of the crew readying the church for the new church year, offering a different kind of hospitality. After becoming a member, I was asked to be a teacher, to teach in the religious education program, and I took a deep breath and I said yes with all kinds of excitement and an enormous, enormous dose of anxiety alongside. And then I was part of the crew that redesigned the chancel wall behind the pulpit. Do you know how complicated projects like that can be? How big, what shape, what color, who does it? Okay. I always went to congregational meetings. There is something about the practice of the art of democracy that engages me deeply. How we elect our leaders, how we approve our budgets, and how we do the other business that keeps us able to do the ministry that we do. As I think back on those days, the coffee hours, the teaching, the work crews, the meetings, I don't remember ever thinking of myself as a volunteer. This was my church community, where I belonged, a community whose well-being mattered to me so very much, a community in which I mattered so very much, a community in which I found and was offered opportunities to serve, hospitality, teaching, cleaning, opportunities to be of use. And it was that church's trust in me, encouragement of me, and the opportunity to lead that they offered me that are part of what makes it possible for me to be here today. We are, said Jaber Crow, imperfect and irresolute, but held together by the frayed and always fraying, incomplete and yet ever holding bonds of the various sorts of affection. We are, wrote Anne Lamott, people banding together to work on ourselves and for human rights, people following a brighter light than the glimmer of our own candle, part of something beautiful, where we can find and create and share purpose, heart, balance, gratitude, and joy. Imperfect, banded together, we belong to one another. There is a poem that has traveled along roads and through days and to many places with me for the better part of 20 years. The writer, Margaret Wheatley, is a consultant. She helps organizations and communities develop new ways to organize themselves. She gleans insights from everywhere, including the science behind chaos theory. Sometimes she talks about how we talk with each other, how our conversations build belonging and create change. This is her poem, Turning to One Another. There is no power greater than a community discovering what it cares about. Ask what's possible, not what's wrong. Keep asking. Notice what you care about and assume that many others share your dream. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Talk to people you know. Talk to people you don't know. Talk to people you never talk to. Be intrigued by the differences you hear. Expect to be surprised. Treasure curiosity more than certainty. Invite in everybody who cares to work on what's possible. Acknowledge that everyone is an expert about something. Know that creative solutions come from new connections. And remember, you don't fear people whose story you know. Real listening always brings people closer together. Trust that meaningful conversation can change your world. Rely on human goodness. Stay together. From the time I was 5 years old and well into my high school years, I was painfully shy. At five, I hid behind my mother when the clerk in our neighborhood grocery store, whom I had known all my life, said hello to me. I'd reach from behind my mother, and I'd grab the edge of her skirt, and I'd pull it as far as I could without embarrassing her, up over my face, trying to build a wall between me and someone I had literally known all my life, who only wanted to say hello. In high school, in the second week of class, I dropped out of public speaking. I loved poetry and politics, and I thought for sure I'd be able to talk with folks about those things, even if I were in front of a class. But just going into the room made me feel like I wanted to throw up. I'm older now, and two things about our talking with each other intrigue me. One is courage, and the other is curiosity. My courage and curiosity used to take a back seat to shyness. They'd be overcome by the fear of being wrong or sounding foolish or any one of 100 other things on my list. But some conversations require courage. Like when I say that thing psychologist Daryl Dwing Sue calls microaggression. That brief everyday exchange that sends a denigrating message to certain individuals because of their group membership. He offers the example from his experience in the Asian American community. It goes something like this. So where are you from? And the answer comes back, for example, from Stowe. No, I mean, where are you really from? As if the person can't possibly be from here, doesn't belong here, is really from some faraway place and just doesn't want to admit it. It takes courage to realize what just happened. Courage to say, on the part of the questioner, right then and right there, what have I just done? And courage to hear the answer. Some conversations require courage, like when I want to ask someone to be part of something with me, to work with me. What if I've never spoken to them before? How do I introduce myself?
what do I say before I pop the question? How can I ask and then keep the conversation going if the response is no? Some conversations require courage, like when I strongly disagree with a decision that's been made or a proposal offered. How do I respond? What if conversation is the way we humans think together, the way we get more clarity and understand more deeply? Some conversations, maybe most of them, and for sure those that start in disagreement, go better not only with courage, but also with a goodly dose of curiosity. Margaret Wheatley writes, "Curiosity is a great help to a good conversation. It creates a spaciousness that is rare. I try to remind myself that everyone has something to teach me when they're saying something I disagree with, have never thought about, or that I consider foolish or wrong. I remind myself that they have something to teach me. I'm curious. And with those two words, I admit I am not capable of figuring things out alone." That day, when I became a member of the First Unitarian Church in Lynchburg, I would not have been there or done that, nor would I be here if it had not been for some courage finally spilling out of me, some curiosity finally overtaking me, and all of the conversations that followed. Imperfect, banded together, beautiful. We belong to one another. Our church exists to proclaim the gospel that each human being is infinitely precious, that the meaning of our lives lies in our interactions with each other. We wish to be a church where we encounter each other with wonder, appreciation, and expectation, where we call out of each other strength, wisdom, and compassion that we never knew we had.